Big picture is so important, but when you don't know how to get there, I see myself as the person with the map. You know, if you're going on a road trip from New York to California, you can't just say, well, go west. I mean, you could end up in Alaska, right? You have to say, turn here, get on this freeway. We're going to be here for 20 miles. You have to be able to connect that larger picture to the steps that have to be taken in between.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Lauren Rilling from KFE Solutions, a fractional CFO firm, which has very good positioning and offers advice based on biblical learnings. So we're going to understand a little bit more about that. And we're also going to talk about one of Lauren's favorite clients and how the impact that she managed to have for them. So Lauren, thanks very much for coming along today. Maybe you should just give us a little bit of a background of where you are in the world and tell us a little bit about where you've come from.
Yeah, thanks, James. It's so fun to be here with you today. I live in Denver, Colorado, so kind of on the other side of the world from you, which is so fun that we can do this and have this conversation. But yeah, I live in a suburb of Denver. I've got four chickens, three children, and a cat. So it's a full house, and I get to work out of my home office, which is very fun. And I have colleagues at KFE Solutions all over the U.S., and we get to help small business owners make better decisions with their company so that they can make more profit, so that they can make a bigger impact. And so there's a lot of joy in what I get to do every day.
Very cool. Maybe just before we get into KFE, what were you doing before that? What did you study and where did you work before that?
Well, it was not a straightforward path for me. I actually got a master's in political science and went into the research world after being a history teacher. And what I learned through the journey of getting a master's degree is actually more applicable to what I do today, because I decided at the beginning of that journey that I didn't want to go into debt for my degree. I had a little student loan from college, and it was just enough taste of debt that I knew that I didn't want to, you know, 10x that for grad school. And so I found a way to look at the finances and to look at how much it was going to take to cash flow that degree. How much did I need to save up every semester on a teacher salary and just make it happen? And so I cash flowed $30,000 over the course of about 2.5 years on a teacher salary. That was how I learned how to manage finances and how I learned about how to have a goal and to achieve it when it comes to your finances, and to do things that other people are saying are not possible, everyone has to take out loans. That's just what you do. And it's really not true. And that was so empowering to me. And that gave me so much freedom to make decisions that were going to be best for me and my kids, instead of having to worry about how am I going to pay off this debt. It was what's best for my family right now. How can we just make the right decisions for our family? And so that's what led me to be interested in finance. And that's how I got interested in financial coaching. And then a lot of my clients happened to be business owners, and they were coming to me with experiencing the financial impact of not understanding their business finances. So I was seeing the downstream effects of not understanding your cash flow, not knowing how to manage it, not understanding profit margins and how you can really influence those and set goals and achieve them in your business. And so that's what got me interested in business finance. And here we are 8 years later, fractional CFO. So that was the background and the journey to get there. It was not straightforward, but it's turned out quite well.
So you did college on hard mode, as they say, trying to get through. What's the worst job you did in order to, or did you have?
That's such a good question, because I had a lot of those. When I moved to Denver, it was in the middle of my degree program, and I got a job at a Starbucks. It turned out to be the second busiest location in the city. I was frequently assigned the 4 a.m. shift, and it was my first time living in the snow. And my car, I didn't know how to drive a car in the snow very well. And my heater was also broken in the car and I didn't have enough money to fix it. So I had to drive 15 minutes to work in the morning in the snow, in the dark, you know, at like 3:30 in the morning with my windows rolled down so that the windshield didn't get frosted over. And that was not pleasant. So I would say that was my least favorite job that I had working my way through school.
Wow, you really, really don't like that, huh?
Yeah, well, it gives me, I feel like, a little more credibility because I don't ask my clients to do anything that I wouldn't have done or that I, you know, didn't do. So yeah, it was, and I can say it was worth it. It was totally worth it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I guess it gives you a bigger sense of satisfaction what you have now, knowing that you went through all that effort to do it the hard way. Okay, cool. I love that story. I think my worst job was I used to have a job cleaning at, it was a dishwasher, and I used to, the first job in the morning was to used to clean the boiled lizards out of the dishwasher with your hands and get rid of them and then start the dishwasher up. So that's what I tell people. So, okay, brilliant. So, okay. So I get a sense from you that like, actually you finances debt, like that was baked into you. Did you get that from your parents or was this, did you like, what was like, most people just sort of say, okay, listen, everyone gets debt. What's the big deal? I'll just take the loan. And what made you different?
Well, yeah, I think some of it had to do with the way that I was raised. You know, my parents were always really good about budgeting and they were very intentional about teaching my sister and me about giving and about tithing and being generous. And I saw a really great example of that growing up. And then it was really though, I would have to say though, I was always very disorganized about money and I didn't really have a sense of spending. This was a learned skill. This is not, I just automatically am good at this stuff. And so I think that's part of why I'm so passionate because I truly believe anyone can be good at finances. So it was really when I took Financial Peace University, which is, you know, the Ramsey personal finance course, my dad said, you need to take this before you graduate college. And so I did the course my senior year of college. That's what really, I think, shaped my mindset around money and also told me this is what you need to look out for. These are the things to avoid. These are the optimal things to do. And I would say I followed it probably 65% until I really had this big goal to cash flow grad school. And then I was all in. And then once I saw, wow, with some really small changes, you can make a really big difference in your life financially. And that also applies to your business. Then I was like 100% all in.
Okay. Well, that's a nice connection there because like, if you've listened to this podcast, you have definitely heard of Dave Ramsey, which is like probably the biggest financial podcast in the US, as I understand it. And there's a connection there. He has a sort of a basis in his advice from faith, you know, his faith, which he's Christian, I believe. And that is that also what brought you along to KFE? Because KFE's mission is a little bit stands out from the crowd when it comes to other fractional CFO firms that I've seen.
Yeah, because KFE Solutions mission, our mission is that we help you increase your profit so that you can increase your impact. And for me, having that biblical approach, like that's just so foundational to everything that I believe. And then that includes the way we use our money because you can't disconnect what you value and your beliefs from the way you spend your money. They're going to go together. It's how you use your money is an outflow of what you believe and what you value. And so for me joining KFE Solutions, it was really important to be with a company that shared those values. And we have six core values. And a couple of those are generosity, graciousness, having the heart of a teacher. So it's those kinds of things where those are the values that we want to be shown in the way that we make decisions. And that includes the way that we use our money.
So that's interesting in two ways. One, I'm thinking of how obviously as a values-driven organization, you had plenty of places to apply for a job, I'm guessing. That was probably one of the big attractions. And how's that played out? Give us a sense of how big the team is and, you know, who leads it there. And does this actually play through, you know, day to day? Is it fulfilling the what you hoped it would before you joined?
Oh yeah, for sure. So before I joined KFE Solutions, I was a solopreneur and I had my own fractional CFO firm that I was growing. And I was actually taking a course and in a sort of a mastermind group with KFE Solutions because they have another side of their company called TCA. It stands for the CFO Accelerator. And so I had gone to the conference and I had taken the course and I just really loved what they were about. So I already knew there was great alignment there. They really were helping me grow my firm. And then over the summer, Michael King, our CEO, reached out and said, hey, would you ever be interested in maybe joining our team? I think we've got great alignment and, you know, our team is growing. And I was like, yeah, you know, let's talk about it. It wasn't really something that I was looking for, but it was just the right people, the right place, and the right time. And so I joined them in October, and we're a team of eight and growing very quickly, right? Or actually, I think nine, a team of nine and growing. So it's been a lot of fun to be part of. And it's just, yeah, it's amazing to be back on a team again. I think that's the part of entrepreneurship that can be really lonely, right? Is that when you don't have a team, you know, it's good to make connections with other people, but it's not the same thing as having that amazing team dynamic. And that's something that I'm just so grateful for at KFE.
Yeah, I mean, I admire anyone who's, especially entrepreneur is one thing, but solopreneur, that's a whole other bag. You know, like you really have to make it work. It's hard. It's hard anyway, but then you have to have a really unique set of skills, you know, from the marketing, the sales, everything in one person. It's just really from the, even the energy levels. And, you know, like me, my partner, Rich, like he really rounds me out. We complement each other way. I would have absolutely nothing without him because I couldn't be a solopreneur. Just wouldn't work, you know?
I hear you. Well, I saw that you guys run on EOS and we do too. So are you the visionary and is Rich the integrator or is it opposite?
I am the visionary. Always sort of cringe a little bit when I hear that word, but because, you know, I'm a geek, really. I'm a programmer. You don't call us visionaries generally, but that's kind of the dynamic. So I'm the guy looking to change things or improve things or mix things up or throw a hand grenade into things. And Rich is the one who's saying no most of the time and sort of picking out every now and again. So we work well together because he brings the backup or the follow through, which I struggle with. And, you know, he provides the other side of that, which is the, you know, the reliability, if you could say it. How have you found EOS? You're on the leadership team there. What's your experience of it been?
So I really have only been integrated with EOS since October. And I would say it's one of my absolute favorite components about our company because it brings so much structure and accountability to our goals. I think that that's something that a lot of businesses just lack. You know, I've seen it. I've experienced it personally in other, you know, jobs that I've been at before. And having a clear and simplified way to say, these are our goals. This is how it's going to be connected to our finances. These are the things that have to get done. And then there's accountability around that. Is I think one of the most powerful things that you can do in your business is to have an actual process for holding yourself accountable to your goals and having a clearly defined way to define what those goals are.
I guess for ages, everyone's been talking about, you know, setting goals, et cetera. And then, but EOS really brings that down to the Monday morning. Like, what am I supposed to do on Monday morning, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Every single thing has to be translated into action. Like, it's not enough just to have stuff on a spreadsheet. And I think this is true with finances. You can know what your profit margins are. You can look at your balance sheet and your statement of cash flows and your profit and loss statement, and you can know what those numbers are. Unless you have the financial insight to know why and what the story is that the numbers are trying to tell you, so that you can then take that information and then turn that into, great, what does that mean for what we need to accomplish 90 days from now? Like, what does that actually look like? And then how do we backwards plan from that so that we know these are the actions I need to take this month? Great. If I need to accomplish an intermediate step in 30 days, what actions am I going to take this week to make sure that that happens? And getting down to that, you know, high level strategy is super important, but then being able to bring that down into what is the step I just need to take today is where I think we connect those numbers with actually seeing change and the results that we want.
So in your experience in working with your which are customers, I guess, is that one of the areas is that a go-to move for you to try and add value? Are you dealing with these crazy visionaries who can't keep things straight all the time, just pure force of personality making their business run maybe?
Oh, crazy visionaries are my favorite. No. Like create, you know, people who are creative, and actually that's how I really relate to that. You know, I'm wired that way too. And so being able to take and appreciate someone's creativity and to be able to put some analytics around it and then to help guide them and say, great, let's have a check-in call in 2 weeks and send me these items for accountability. You know, I had a conversation with a client yesterday. We were chatting through some things and I said, okay, for accountability, would you please take a screenshot of your calendar? Because you're going to put this on your calendar. Because we always say, if it's not on your calendar, it's just an idea. If you're committed, it'll live on your calendar. So put this thing on your calendar so you're actually committing to the time that it's going to get done. Take a screenshot of it and then text it to me for accountability so I know that you're planning on doing it. And then we're going to review and see how it went. That's what that accountability looks like. And being able to break it down, because it can be so overwhelming when you see big picture is so important, but when you don't know how to get there, you know, I see myself as the person with the map. You know, if you're going on a road trip from New York to California, you can't just say, well, go west. You know, you could end up in Alaska, right? You have to say, turn here, get on this freeway. We're going to be here for 20 miles. You have to be able to connect that larger picture to the steps that have to be taken in between.
That's the most baller thing I've heard all week. So you actually asked someone for the screenshot of the calendar event. I would be too afraid to do that, but that's awesome. Maybe I'll build up the courage to ask someone on the team for that. So that's really cool. So it sounds like, okay, because straight away, you know, FP&A gets done, but straight away it sounds like you provide a lot more for your clients. When you're getting down to that sort of level, are you blurring the line between business coach or accountability coach? In what's the most, where do you add value? I'm going to ask you about the biblical stuff in a second, but like, it sounds like you do a lot more than get the accounts done or get the financial plan out.
Yeah. So I don't even think it's a blurring of the line. I think we're integrating what should be integrated, actually. I don't think there's a lot of value in just reporting the numbers without connecting it and bringing that element of coaching, right? When we say that we provide executive level leadership to the CEO, we know that that business owner position is lonely. We know that it's hard to be at the top making all these decisions. And when you're growing a team, now it's not just you. Now your decisions are affecting other people's livelihood. So when that level of pressure and stress is on you, you need someone that you can speak to candidly. You are looking for that person who is bringing that financial expertise. You know your business and your craft better than anybody, but we know the finances and we can bring that financial clarity to the discussion. And we can be really candid with you about what needs to happen. And we can draw out of you maybe some of those fears that are holding you back or whatever it is that's stopping you from taking that right next step. So we can bring that executive level leadership, and you really don't have that if all you're doing is presenting information.
So it sounds like solopreneurs, joining those dots there, is someone, you know, you often work with, someone who doesn't have that accountability or even partner in the business. Maybe they've got a business where they've built it themselves, and you slot in there and provide that sort of sounding board.
I would say our ideal client usually does have a team, but they don't have a board of directors. They don't have a bunch of investors, you know, telling them what to do. We really love to work with single owner companies and family owned businesses, because we really want to help the business owner achieve their personal goals. And so whatever their objectives are for, you know, the income that they want to bring, their lifestyle, their, you know, how they want to make an impact in their community, we want to grow the business around those personal goals, and not have to sort of be being messengers, you know, for investors. It gets a little complicated that way.
Okay, so you said a very interesting thing there, which normally doesn't fall within the remit of a financial plan, which is, you know, the impact that they want to have. And you have a very interesting on your LinkedIn, which I recommend people looking up. You have the goal, the focus for the business really focuses on the impact. The profit isn't the goal, but the impact is the goal, which I think is really cool. Is that what a biblically based financial strategy is versus a regular financial strategy? Is that the difference, or what other differences are there?
Well, I think that no matter what your belief system is, you know, you can desire to make an impact, right? But yes, definitely having a biblical perspective of finance and of business and of your life would mean that it's not about, your life is not all about you. It's not all about your own personal success. It's not all about you making as much money as possible so that you can have the most comfortable life as possible. It's about what are we doing to steward this money, because we recognize that it's not actually my money. It's God's money. It's not my talent. It's the talent that he's given me. It's not the resources that I have been able to accumulate. It's resources that God has made available to me, and I'm to steward them according to the things that he loves and that he cares about. So I need to be really intentional about identifying what those things are and what he's called me to do, and so that I can steward those finances. And that's going to involve generosity. That's going to involve giving. That's going to involve being generous, you know, perhaps with a portion of my profits. Also, how could I be generous toward my team, toward the employees who are making the company work? It's not simply a matter of making the profit as high as possible. Sometimes it's going to be balancing that with having a really amazing team culture and doing a good job taking care of the team. So there's so many ways that it can get expressed, but when we start with that vision for impact, then we can work backwards from there to decide what the money needs to look like in order to make that happen. And I think that's a different take than just how do we make sure that our profit is as high as possible, you know, for the investors or for, you know, whatever other purpose.
That's good, because a lot of people have this fear that a professional finance person is going to come in and sort of cut everything away and just look at the bottom line. I'm thinking of the prototypical private equity finance controller coming in and just like cutting to the bone or whatever. Okay, so straight away, I'm getting a very good sense of why people come to KFE, because like you're a family business background. It's so much more than about the profit and the bottom line. As might be, people have been working with you for decades or years, and then someone with the same values understands that, so they're not getting frustrated with you in terms of why aren't you making the optimal financial decision all the time. You're a bit more aligned in that way.
Well, and don't get me wrong, the profit's important. You know, we need financial health is very important in a business. So sometimes the mindset of the business owner is so altruistic that their business isn't healthy. And so sometimes it's working from that point to say, we want you to be able to be impactful. We love that you want to be generous. We also need to have healthy business finances. That's part of stewardship. Often it's about how do we optimize your profit, because the companies that come to us for help are not usually optimizing their profit. So that's why we say we help you increase your profit so that you can increase your impact, because you might want to be generous, but at the same time, we want you to be able to be generous for a long time and not, you know, run out of money. So there is that balance.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of your favorite clients, and because I've got a very clear idea why people might work with you guys now. I love the values-driven approach. I think people listening to this would know straight away if this is the sort of firm that they want to align with. So maybe you could just tell us somebody, what's your favorite story in terms of a client you've been able to help?
So one of my clients that I just adore working with, they were growing. Top line revenue was growing. Their top line revenue was about $5.5 million. And yet their profit was shrinking every year. They could never figure out why they had hardly any cash in the business and why at certain times of the year it was hard to make payroll. And so this was really, really stressful for them. You know, they kept growing. They were booking almost 100% of the jobs that they were bidding, and they were a landscape company and they did like construction landscape. And so they were like, what's going on here? We're getting all the jobs. Our revenue is increasing. I don't know why I don't have any money. And this is a really common problem. This is not just this one company, but I thought they're such a great example of the pain and the stress that business owners can feel, because they just feel like, if I can just get this next project, if I win this bid, you know, it's a $200,000 project, that's going to bring in all this revenue, then I'll be able to pay for everything. And that's just not how it works. We have to be aware of our finances every step of the way. And so what we figured out by working together, we figured out that their pricing was way too low. And now part of the issue is, yeah, but if I increase my prices, will anyone give me the job, right? That's always the fear. And they needed to increase their price a lot. But we knew that that was the only way out of this. You know, they were not going in the right direction with their profit. So you have to raise your prices. This is not optional. You're literally working for free right now because you're losing money on some of these jobs. And so unless you want to pay someone else to work for them for free, you need to raise your prices. That's what they did. And in addition to that, they realized, oh, we don't have great estimating practices. We don't have anything standard that we're using. So they standardized their estimating practices. By standardizing those, well, now we can job cost, so we can track our expenses for labor and materials for each job so that we can look at the profit per job. We can look at, are we estimating this accurately or not? Or where do we need to make adjustments so that we can fine tune that and make sure that our estimates are accurate? Therefore, we're making sure that we're pricing correctly. And then we need to build in SOPs so that the data actually goes into the computer systems that we need to have the data. I don't know if you've ever seen a video or seen a demonstration of precise instructions for making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
No, Googling it now though. Sounds great.
If you say, how do you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? It's, you get out your bread, you spread peanut butter on it, you spread the jam on it, you put the other piece of bread on top, there's your sandwich. But if you follow those directions exactly, you're going to end up with a loaf of bread with a jar of peanut butter smashed on top of it, right? You're not going to actually end up with a sandwich. You have to say, you take the two pieces of bread out of the bag of the bread, and then you have to take off the lid for the peanut butter. You have to get the knife. You have to put the knife in the peanut butter, scoop out one tablespoon, spread it on the bread. You know, you have to be so step by step. That level of granularity and clarity is what's necessary if you're going to job cost effectively, if you're going to keep track of all of your materials and all of your labor. And what are the protocols? What are the procedures? How do we accept a change order? How do we, so that we're not, again, working for free? Like, this is on our dime. If a customer doesn't give us the approval to pay extra for a change order, then we're eating that cost, and that's going to affect our profit margins, right? So we have to have procedures in place for all of these things so that we can gather the right data, so that we know where are we losing profit. And then once we have that information, we know what to do to fix it. And that's how we keep our profit. So we have to price correctly, we have to estimate correctly, and then we need the procedures and processes in place to collect that information correctly. Because it's not enough just to send everything over to the accounting firm to bookkeep and to say, well, for the year, this is what you made. That doesn't give us any insight into why. So we need those, we need to know what data sets we need so that we know what to change so that we can stop those problems and make sure we're keeping all of that profit in the business and that cash in the business. And so that's what we did with this client. And now their projections are looking great. You know, they're not going to be, at the end of this year, they're not going to be cash poor anymore. They're bidding appropriately. They're not getting 95% of the jobs, but they don't need to. They're actually going to increase their revenue doing less work and make more money doing it. And so I'd rather see that than have twice the amount of revenue, but still the same profit margins.
Now, you made that sound very easy, but I know there's someone sitting not a million miles from where I'm sitting right now. You could listen to that advice. But actually, I've seen it where you say, listen, what's your net? What's your gross? And they say, it's 20%. And you can just tell straight away, you know, they have no clue. So it's a big change for an organization that has grown to 5 million. Do you know if they used a particular software, or more importantly, how do you affect that culture change? Because that's a big intellectually, you can know that's the correct thing to do, but then you got salespeople who are winning deals the way they've won them. You know, they don't want to start having to hear no. Then you have the operations people who are like doing it the way they've been doing it. And suddenly you're trying to persuade them and they feel like they're being micromanaged. And do you have any advice for people who know they should make this transaction in terms of cost, job costing? Do you have any tips or advice, or do you just suck it up and you do it or go out of business and that's it? Tough luck.
First of all, I mean, you hit on something really key, because this is really where a lot of our conversations with our clients center around. It's helping them rise up to that level of leadership that they need to be in their businesses and coaching them through that. And sometimes it's giving them encouragement that they can do this. Sometimes it's challenging a limiting belief that they have. Sometimes it's flat out disagreeing with them and just saying, no, this is what needs to happen. Here's the consequence if it doesn't happen. And we do that out of care because we know that they can succeed and we want them to succeed. And like, this is just what you need to hear right now. And so knowing the way to approach those conversations is so crucial, because we want that client to be empowered as the business owner to make those changes and to build the kind of company culture that they want to have in their company. And so these are very real discussions that we've had about, well, yeah, but so-and-so I've told them that they need to give me this report and they just don't do it. Okay, well, let's talk about that. What happens if you don't get the report? Okay, so this isn't negotiable. We need this. In the book, Extreme Ownership, one of the things that I love most about it is they explain that, you know, you can tell your team you have to do this. You can give them orders. But if you really want buy-in, you might be able to get some compliance from that. But if you really want buy-in, bring them into the vision. Bring your team into why you're asking them to do what you're asking them to do. When you do that, you're going to get so much more buy-in. When you are leading by example, the values that you say this company holds, and when you bring them in and say, this is how your commitment is going to affect the well-being of this company, people buy into that. And if people don't buy into it, then you might go, okay, now we have a values misalignment. This isn't an issue of you just don't know what to do. It's you just don't want to be on board. Then that's a different conversation than, oh, I haven't trained you. I haven't given you those direct instructions and explained, you know, this is why, and thank you for, you know, doing this. And then I think the other thing is that a lot of conversations I've been having lately have been around profit sharing and incentivizing results. So how do we incentivize that buy-in? You know, if we're going to ask people to do something, you don't just want to say, well, I'll pay you another dollar an hour. You want to say, look, your participation in this is integral to our results. So in a sense, it's almost like they're business owners or not. But if there is a reward and a financial incentive attached to the results that they're helping the company produce, that's another great way to get that buy-in. You really see who wants to be invested and who isn't.
I have to ask you about that, because as a business owner myself, the words profit share, I mean, it sounds like it's like a samurai sword. Not everyone should own one. Like, it feels like you could do a lot of damage to your business. And the big fear I have when I hear that is, well, how do you put the genie back in the bottle if it doesn't work? It might work for the first 3 months, and then does everyone just go back to doing what they did before? As a tool, let's say, because it's, I mean, getting people aligned and set on a vision and a goal is, I can get that. That makes a lot of sense. Where would you recommend people to look at profit sharing versus you're saying, no, well, it's not right for your organization?
I don't know that I've come across an organization where it wouldn't be appropriate to have some sort of performance-based profit sharing system. And so there's so many different ways you can do it. It's not that there's going to be one right or one wrong way. You definitely, there's going to be like a level of HR compliance that I am not an expert in. So you've got to check your legal and HR boxes there first. But, you know, profit sharing can be so many different things. It can be, we're going to distribute a percentage of our net profit every year based on certain performance review metrics. If we achieve this goal, this is what your bonus is going to be. It could be based on, you know, even per project. So another company that I work with, they're a fundraising consultant agency. And so what we did is we structured the consultant pay so that they're getting paid a portion of the contract that they're consulting for. Plus, we've come up with a scorecard of results that we want their clients to get. And so based on that performance, they are also eligible for performance-based bonuses. And so that's another way to do it. But you have to make sure it's financially solvent too. So you have to plan this in advance and say, if we pay out the maximum, do we still have profit in the business, or are we giving away all of our cash, right? So you do have to sort of put it in context of what's going on in the business. What do we need to achieve? How are we doing cash-wise? You have to have healthy financials to do this. And you have to make sure that it's a sustainable program. But if you can tie compensation to results, I think that that's always a good thing. And also to incentivize that overall company success buy-in. If you can do those two things with a profit sharing or bonus type of structure, I think that's always a great thing for a company.
Okay. So, and I can see how if that's where it's useful to have someone who's done it before. It's not their first rodeo. They've done these profit shares. They've seen the corner cases, and that's what your fractional CFO is for, I guess. Very cool. Let me just finish up here. I'd like to ask guests who come on board. I like the idea of business heroes. I have my own personal business heroes who aren't particularly famous or anything, but I feel it's always fascinating find out who people are inspired by when it comes to business. So who would you say is your business hero and why?
We've talked about how Dave Ramsey was really instrumental in getting me started, but I have a second business hero, and that's Mike Michalowicz. He is the author of Profit First, and the Profit First, it's a cash flow management system. And I'm a really big fan of it. And the reason is that when I started my financial coaching business, this was just supposed to be a little side gig. You know, I had two like little twins at home who were 1 year old, and I just wanted something that I could do on the side that, you know, and help people. And I had never thought of myself as a business owner before. I just thought that world was so foreign, and I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I found, oh, I really love this. Business ownership is fun. I'm not terrible at it. You know, this is kind of, I like this. Let's do more of this. As I started growing this financial coaching practice, what I discovered is that my revenue was increasing, but so were my expenses. And I thought that I had to achieve a certain dollar amount before I could really start paying myself, before I could afford to pay myself. And I already was applying the principles of personal finance that I knew, like make a budget, cash flow your expenses, don't go into debt, you know, kind of operate within your means, all of those things. But when I read the book Profit First, it fundamentally changed the way that I thought about business finance and the way that I started operating. The principles that I was using didn't change, but I started putting my profit first, which meant that I worked backwards and I set a goal for my profit and I reduced my expenses so that I would protect that profit. And for me, just starting out, my goal was to just pay myself $1,000 a month. And, you know, don't despise small beginnings. Like, it was a very, very humble start. But for me and for my family, another $1,000 a month in income was a big deal. Here's what else it did. It wasn't just about the $1,000. What that did for me is that it forced me to evaluate my decisions differently. It forced me to value my time in a different way. And because of that, I learned how to say yes to the right things and no to distractions. And I learned how to create better personal and professional boundaries. That in turn gave me more confidence. That in turn helped me increase my revenue, and it helped me serve my clients better. So it had this waterfall effect where it wasn't just about the money, right? It's not just about the profit. It's about all of the things that profit represents and what you have to do to protect it. Putting profit first and saying, if we're going to prioritize profit, what does that mean for the way that we need to show up personally and professionally? That was more powerful than even the additional income, which was very nice. And it was my starting point, right? I bring that story and I bring that way of thinking to my clients. And it's such a small but fundamental shift that can really unlock those doors of opportunity.
Yeah, that's a great book. And me and my wife read that book. I think we've been in business 10 plus years before we read it. And then we're like, oh yeah, that's what we're supposed to make a profit. Oh yeah. Why shouldn't you put that first? You know, like, and the book is great, but you know, we read the book and it was basically, all right, take the profit out first. That's more or less, you don't have to read the book if you don't have time, just take the profit out first, like an expense, treat it like an expense, and that's it. You know, like it's non-negotiable. But of course, you got to be willing to lose some sales for that. That's the hard part, especially when you get going, because, you know, if you put the profit you really want in there, then you know, like people will inevitably, you won't be right for everyone. And that's when you're a solopreneur, I think, especially at the beginning, it's like that, it's that like rejection, especially if you're delivering the service yourself, that fear of rejection is massive. And I think we've all been there. You know, you get the contract in and you immediately went, damn, I should have charged more. That was too easy, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Okay. Awesome. This has been so entertaining. You're such an excellent communicator on this topic. I can clearly see, you know, how you've been successful, and also KFE sound fantastic. I love the way they have this values-led approach. It's really clear, you know, the type of businesses that you can help. Maybe before you finish up, just tell us a bit more. Who's an ideal client for you and how could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we work with small businesses, typically in the 3 to 20 million revenue range, maybe 3 to 30 revenue range is our typical client. And industries that we serve: professional services, trade services, and construction. That's our primary. We do work with other industries as well. We don't work with e-commerce and retail, or you know, a tech startup that would, you know, with a lot of investors and, you know, a lot of trade services in particular.
Real businesses, it sounds like, none of this tech stuff.
But we like to be pretty niche, and we feel like we really understand that business owner's struggles and what they're experiencing and some of the operations around what they need to do differently to get those financial results. So those are the industries that we work with. So trade services, professional services, and construction.
And what's the best way for people to reach out to you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me on LinkedIn. And to get in touch with our company, our website is kfesolutions.com.
Great. I will put those links in the show notes so people can find it. Lauren, thank you very much. I really enjoyed our chat. And thanks very much for listening. If you've got this far in the podcast, well done. You get a special star from me. If you know of someone who would be a great guest for the podcast, please reach out to me, james.kennedy@procurementexpress, and we'll see you in the next one.